Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a three-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday as we get you ready for the Week 2 matchup between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles in a Super Bowl rematch. We got a lot to get into in today's show. The beat writer for the Kansas State Wildcats is picking them to lose tomorrow in their matchup against Arizona. We are going to talk to Kellis Robinette coming up in just a bit. Elliot Shore Parks, who covers the Eagles for 94WIP in Philadelphia, is going to join the show. He said that the aura is at stake for the Kansas City Chiefs. Joshua Briscoe is also going to join us on the show to get you ready for Week 2 between the Chiefs and the Eagles. We got a lot of football planned in today's show. Really happy that you guys are here with us on this wonderful Thursday. Before we start with Chiefs and Eagles, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. I mean, it'd be great if you could tell two people to check out the show, but you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. If you could just tell one person to check out the show, I would greatly appreciate it. And number three, I need you to remember that the open of the show is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place with five locations around Kansas City. Stop by, watch a little football, grab something to drink, and enjoy the return of fall and the football season. All right, let's dive into it. I think this is the game of the week in the National Football League. Now, sure, maybe some of the luster and allure is off of it because the Chiefs are not 1-0 and how they performed on Friday night against the Chargers, but this is still a big game with two of the five best teams in the National Football League, in my opinion. One thing has been very interesting, and it is carried over from the offseason. This is not just a reaction to what happened against the Chargers. It is a continuation of what happened in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. I'm going to play some audio for you guys from Rob Gronkowski. I think a lot of people around the league feel this way about the Kansas City Chiefs. This is what Gronk had to say with Kay Adams.
What I was surprised about is when things aren't going their way, as you can see, when they start struggling a little bit, they start yelling at each other. Their blame game starts going on.
Now,
you can see it on
that?
The sidelines. And that's not a good situation. I mean, you want to come together when you're down, when things aren't going your way, and you want to come together to figure out why, you know, everything's not going the way it needs to go. So to see them starting to point fingers is not a good sign. They got to, you know, get incorporated on and get on the same page and not be blaming others. Remember Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas, and Buster Douglas finally beat the crap out of Mike Tyson and made Mike Tyson not invincible anymore? Well, this is kind of the same situation. The Philadelphia Eagles opened the floodgates last year in the Super Bowl versus the Kansas City Chiefs like, hey, we're not afraid of this super, you know, of this super team, Kansas City Chiefs, that are very, very well known. I feel like a lot of teams last year had that fear. Oh, I can't swing on the Chiefs. We can't give them our best shot because they're so well known and everyone is talking about them. So the Kansas City, the Philadelphia Eagles punched them in the face. The Chiefs didn't know how to react to that because no one else was doing that. Well, going into this year now, the Los Angeles Chargers punched them in the face. The Chiefs were like, whoa, they're coming at us. How do we react? Well, they didn't know how to react because no one was doing that before. So the Philadelphia Eagles opened that floodgate of, hey, if you punch these guys in the face, you take it to them, you come out swinging, they're going to fold and they're not going to be the team that you've been seeing all last year.
That was Rob Gronkowski. He was on with Kay Adams getting you ready for the Week 2 matchup between the Chiefs and the Eagles. I don't know if Gronk is right or wrong. I think what he's saying certainly has some merit. I do believe that we saw the Chiefs get punched back in February and they saw their own blood for the first time in a long time and were kind of shell-shocked by it and didn't really know how to respond. We wouldn't be having this conversation if the Chiefs had lost 31-24. But when you get handled the way the Chiefs got handled, it's kind of hard to avoid the criticism. When you come out and start slow against who people are telling you is the number one contender in your division, and they also were a team that punched you back and you didn't really seem too equipped. We can talk about injuries and all of those things. The Chargers are not a completely healthy team either. They lost their left tackle. Offensive line continued to flourish. They continued to perform really well. Maybe you disagree with Gronk, and Gronk's take makes you angry. But I firmly believe that's how people in the league are currently discussing and feel about the Chiefs. A little bit of front runners. They're great when things are going well. If you can get them down, if you can fluster them, if you can take away some of the options for Patrick Mahomes, you can kind of limit that team. I think the league feels that the Chiefs were kind of fortunate last year with a toe out of bounds or a missed kick or a block kicked or an illegal procedure call. And the Chiefs were a team that were kind of fortunate in those one-score games, and now the pendulum is swinging the other way. I want to play for you what Elliott Shore Parks had to say because he echoed a lot of what you just heard from Rob Gronkowski.
Just the reality of where the Chiefs are at. They are obviously one of the best dynasties in NFL history. I think that Andy and Patrick Mahomes still have a very strong argument for being the top quarterback head coach duo in the league. But I think Chiefs fans also need to be honest about what the product on the field has looked like for the past year. If the Chiefs, you know, after last year where they did not play well overall, I think you would probably agree with that. A lot of one-win, one-score games, a lot of games that, you know, you're probably not going to win consistently. And they did it, and credit to them for that. But they have not looked like a dominant team for a long time. In the biggest game they played last year, they got absolutely embarrassed. They went to Brazil last week and lost to a Chargers team that consistently loses big games. And if they lose the home opener in a chance to even up their record as opposed to going 0-2, I don't think the Chiefs have that mystique anymore. I'd probably be more afraid to go play Buffalo. I might be more afraid to go play Baltimore, and that hasn't been the case for a really long time. So I really think this Sunday is about seeing if the Chiefs are still the Chiefs or if they're just a team with a good quarterback and head coach and a bad roster.
I agree with a lot of what Elliott Shore Parks had to say there at the end. This is the second time in Patrick Mahomes' career in which the Chiefs have been underdogs in a home game. The expectation is, A, Arrowhead is usually the advantage, and Patrick Mahomes is usually the advantage. Vegas is telling you, despite having both of those things, they still think Philadelphia is the better team and can win this game. The Chiefs have been showered with all the love and all the praise, as you should, as a team that has played in five of the last six Super Bowls, as a team that has gone to three straight Super Bowls, won two of them. The Chiefs deserve all of the positive press that they have received over the last half decade. They have been the team of the 2020s, no question about it. This is the first time in a while in which people are openly doubting the Chiefs and don't know if they still have it anymore. The crown that the Chiefs have worn on their head for the last 5-6 years. People are telling you they think it's a little bit tarnished. The beautiful thing about sports is eventually the talking ends and you have to go prove it on the field. My big take this week, my big stance this week is I want to see the Chiefs look like when their back is up against the wall. We talk a lot of times about those John Wick games from Patrick Mahomes and Over My Dead Body and revenge and hearing all the outside noise and the Chiefs taking notes and remembering those things. I mean, we can go through a laundry list. I could give you an and-one mixtape full of people who are currently doubting the Chiefs and feel like the run is over. Sunday's a really good test of that. This is a team that embarrassed you in the Super Bowl, a team that you know very well, a team that can dominate you up front, can dominate you on the defensive side of the ball, that has the perceived better roster than you. What kind of fight do you have? What kind of energy do you have? How do you come out in this game? or the criticism about the Chiefs and you being able to knock them down and them not being able to get themselves back up will only continue to get louder and louder. The only way to end this conversation, to quiet all of the noise around them, is to go prove it on the field and go dominate and beat one of these teams. No one's saying you got to beat the Eagles 31-0, but can the Chiefs win this game 27-17 and prove to everybody that they're still the best team in the National Football League? But maybe you don't feel like you have to prove that. It's week two of the NFL season. You're a little bit banged up. The Chiefs are usually a team that gets better as the season progresses. So I'm not pressing the panic button if they lose this, but I think it is pretty clear that I think players around the league, teams around the league feel like, hey, Philadelphia showed you that you can get this team down. You can punch Kansas City. You can be physical with Kansas City. You can do these certain things, and we don't think they have the ability to punch back. I started the week with saying, if you are a team that doesn't have knockout power and you can only win the fight off points, it just puts yourself in a very dangerous position. It puts yourself in a position where it's 3rd and 14 and you got to make this one play to be able to win. And the Chiefs have been in that situation, which feels like for the last year and a half, where it's one play here, one play here, one play here. I want to see them go out, execute, play well, and really, really show that they are the best team in the National Football League. And there's no better team to do it against other than the perceived best team in the National Football League. Coming up on the other side, the coordinator spoke with the media today. Matt Nagy came out and was very emphatic about this has to stop with Juwan Taylor. We'll play for you what he had to say. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with CDOT. Tune in as Nate Taylor of ESPN joins the...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Show in studio every Friday at 4 on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. The Drive, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I want to play for you guys what Matt Nagy had to say coming up in a bit. We were talking about the audio from Rob Gronkowski. He was sitting down with Kay Adams earlier today. Here's what Gronk had to say.
What I was surprised about is when things aren't going their way, as you can see, when they start struggling a little bit, they start yelling at each other. Their blame game starts going on.
Yeah,
you can see it on
that?
The sidelines. And that's not a good situation. I mean, you want to come together when you're down, when things aren't going your way, and you want to come together to figure out why, you know, everything's not going the way it needs to go. So to see them starting to point fingers is not a good sign. They got to, you know, get incorporated on and get on the same page and not be blaming others. Remember Mike Tyson versus Buster Douglas, and Buster Douglas finally beat the crap out of Mike Tyson and made Mike Tyson not invincible anymore? Well, this is kind of the same situation. The Philadelphia Eagles opened the floodgates last year in the Super Bowl versus the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, hey, we're not afraid of this super, you know, of this super team, Kansas City Chiefs, that are very, very well known. I feel like a lot of teams last year had that fear. Oh, I can't swing on the Chiefs. We, you know, we can't give them our best shot because they're so well known and everyone is, you know, is talking about them. So the Kansas City, the Philadelphia Eagles punched them in the face. The Chiefs didn't know how to react to that because no one else was doing that. Well, going into this year now, the Los Angeles Chargers punched them in the face. The Chiefs were like, whoa, they're coming at us. How do we react? Well, they didn't know how to react because no one was doing that before. So the Philadelphia Eagles opened that floodgate of, hey, if you punch these guys in the face, you take it to them, you come out swinging, they're going to fold and they're not going to be the team that you've been seeing all last year.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, the Chiefs have been taking everyone's best shot for years now. Absolutely. I mean, you aren't beating the Chiefs if you don't give them your best shot. You're not talented enough. You don't have the coaching. You don't have the quarterback play. If you don't play as well as you can play, that usually has not been good enough to beat Kansas City. I think the point that Gronk is making is Kansas City in the past has been able to take your best punch, shake it off, and then hit you back, and then you would be the team to fall. Now you've seen them get the weak knees a little bit, and now you feel like you can go in for the knockout. I mean, this is a common theme in sports. For example, Alabama used to be a team that we all used to write a L by your name. You know, when you see the schedule come out and you see Alabama right there on the list and you write the L by their name. I don't know how you can feel that way about Alabama right now after what I saw Florida State do to them. If Florida State can beat Alabama, Missouri certainly can beat Alabama coming up in a month or so. Now, I'm not comparing the Chiefs to Alabama. I know the changes, new coach, new quarterback, all of those things. But I think you get the analogy that I'm making. It usually just takes one person to accomplish something for you to say, oh yeah, we can do it too. I'm very interested to see if the Chiefs have the ability to end these conversations, because the conversation is over on Sunday. If the Chiefs beat the Philadelphia Eagles and they beat them 24-14 and Mahomes goes out there and plays well, the defense gets back to getting after the quarterback, and you can never avenge a Super Bowl loss with the week two win, but the conversation is going to be the Chiefs are back. The Chiefs played well. So I'm not asking the Chiefs to go out and play perfect like they did a couple of years ago against the Bears, a Taylor Swift's first game, and they just go out there and beat a team 41-3. I don't think that's realistic against not the quality of opponent. But can you control the line of scrimmage? Can you run the football effectively? Can you protect Patrick Mahomes? Can you get off the field on third downs? Can you get after Jalen Hurts? Can you do the things that it takes for you to win a game at a high level and execute? Can you start fast? The Chiefs, historically, have been a team that they get down 7-0, 10-0 early on, and then you need Mahomes to pull some magic out. I don't know if you can get down 10-0, 13-0 on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. I think you got to bring the energy from 60 minutes. You got to set the tone. You have to be the enforcer in this game. Because if there's one team that feels like they can push the Chiefs around, it's the Eagles. I don't think you're afraid of the Chiefs in Arrowhead. You're not afraid of them in the Super Bowl. If there is a team that feels like they can go in and push Creed Humphrey around and push Trey Smith around and dominate this team up front, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. Don't even give them the opportunity to entertain that thought on Sunday at Arrowhead. I want to play for you guys what Matt Nagy had to say as he met with the media. Today was coordinator day out at Arrowhead Stadium. And Matt Nagy says that Juwan Taylor's got to be better when it comes to the penalties.
Speaking to the obvious, the penalties, that can't happen. And so that's where we're at. We've made it loud and clear. Juwan knows that. He understands it. It's something that, especially in a moment like that in that game, when things are a little bit off kilter now with the personnel, and you start to move the ball, you have a couple positive plays, and then boom, a penalty or a second, you know, so three penalties and a hold, not good enough. He knows that. When there's no one hiding from it, he's not hiding from it. He understands what's expected, and I think he's ready for that challenge here as we go.
All right. I'm going to give you guys some numbers. These numbers, I think, are pretty important and fly in the face of what you just heard from the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't believe them when they tell me that they can correct the Juwan Taylor penalty problem, because that's who he is. Now, we can talk about the Chris Collinsworth side of this. And yes, there was a time where I think Chris Collinsworth, in front of 15, 20 million people, noticed something with Juwan Taylor. And I do think that the league put a heavy emphasis on this. That was two seasons ago. We're in year three of this. That was the third game in Juwan Taylor's career. He has now played 41 games with the Kansas City Chiefs. So I don't want to entertain the conversation about Chris Collinsworth and the damage that he has done to Juwan Taylor's career. You got to play better. It's really that simple. Let me give you this stat. Juwan Taylor has played in 41 games for the Kansas City Chiefs. 41. He has committed at least one penalty in those games. In 25 of those games. In 25 of the 41 games that Juwan Taylor has played, he has committed at least one penalty. He has committed at least two or more penalties in 11 of those games. 11. 25% of the time that Juwan Taylor plays for the Chiefs, he will commit at least two penalties. Over 50% of the time, he is going to commit at least one penalty in the game. I don't believe them when they say he can't keep doing this. He will continue to do this. That's who he is, at least on this team. That's who he is. I don't know if it's physical. I don't know if it's mental. I don't know what it is, but you guys have not shown me that you have the ability to fix the Juwan Taylor penalty issue. I see a lot of people that say, well, when he doesn't commit penalties, he's a good player. The penalties are significant. If you add up the penalty yardage that Juwan Taylor has cost them playing for the Chiefs, and we're not even talking about the penalties that get picked up. I'm only counting the ones that actually go on the board. He has cost them 295 penalty yards since playing for the Chiefs. 295. This offense cannot overcome that on Sunday. You cannot overcome Juwan Taylor's two holding penalties that erase first downs and now take what would have been a first down and turn it into first and 20. You don't have the firepower to be able to do that. I'm not saying the Chiefs got to play a perfect game. I will continue to say that. That is not what I am here advocating. You don't have to play perfect to beat the Eagles. I don't want to paint them like they are some unbeatable team. But you can't give them advantages and committing turnovers, committing penalties, physical mistakes, mental errors. That's usually what gets you beat. And I don't think the Chiefs right now, they don't have the available firepower to be able to overcome some of these mistakes. You could do it when you had Rice and Worthy and when the running game was explosive. You get into a first and 10, you got the offense to be able to overcome that. This team just doesn't have that right now. You just got to play a lot cleaner brand of football on Sunday.
Here's what bothers me about what Matt Nagy said there. And maybe bother is a strong term. He says, we got to clean that up. Well, your numbers would indicate it's not getting cleaned up. So is the cleanup Jalen Moore? Because what's that saying? A tiger doesn't change his stripes. Juwan Taylor commits penalties. I looked up the stats with the Jags. In his career, he's committed 77 penalties if we include the Jags years. We looked at the Chiefs numbers. So this is more than just Chris Collinsworth one night said a thing and then the whole league turned on him. No, he's been a penalty-prone player most of his NFL career. So when Matt Nagy says he's aware of that and we're going to get it cleaned up, it sounds like to me the only cleanup is a change because Juwan Taylor is who Juwan Taylor is. And I don't know if it's going to ever happen, but Jalen Moore is sitting there collecting $21 million and dust. Do they ever make the leap? Because right now, Juwan Taylor is just a problem. I never thought in the offseason with Kingsley playing his first year at left guard and Josh Simmons playing his first year at left tackle that our biggest conversation going into the Eagles game would be Juwan Taylor. But here we sit. Those numbers indicate a fix isn't coming unless a change is coming.
That's why I'm really intrigued to see if the penalties continue with Juwan Taylor, you now have a fail-safe option. I don't think that he's going to be on the team next year. So if there's any player that you can maybe be a little bit more assertive of and try to make an example of, it's a player that you plan on walking on at the end of the season. He is not going to be on the team next year. Like, he's just not going to be on the team. His contract doesn't really allow that. They get too many advantages in releasing him and moving on from him. And you already believe that you have his replacement on the roster. If things get shaky, if something goes wrong on Sunday, this is a close game, but you have a couple of penalties and you have some things that go wrong. Are you going to be willing to pull the plug? I mean, your offensive coordinator came out and said, this is unacceptable. This can't happen. This can't happen. We all acknowledge in Juwan Taylor's career that at some point here in the next couple of weeks, he is going to commit a very costly penalty that takes a first down off the board. I've just seen it happen too many times since he's been in the Chiefs uniform. I don't believe him. Something is going to happen. Are you prepared to make a very public stance and sit him? And not just though, we've seen them give him like a little bit of a rest. We've seen them do that in the middle of a drive before. Hey, this drive's not going really well. Why don't you sit over here? Why don't you reset? We'll then bring you back in on the next series and we'll get things going. If they give Jalen Moore the job, if something goes wrong or if he's not playing up to their standards, are they prepared to leave it in Jalen Moore's hands? Or, Rob, are they going to be quick to go back to Juwan Taylor and what they know?
I don't think any of us have the answer to that. But I would tell you, historically, they haven't pulled Juwan Taylor. Now, if you want to tell me that Wanye Morris is not near the player Jalen Moore is and whoever was backing up before Wanye, I'm open to that conversation. But this problem isn't new, and the Chiefs have stuck it out at every turn. So I would love for them to make the change and treat him the way they treated Kingsley last year. it's not getting done. You are a handcuff to our Super Bowl ability. It's time to make a change. But, man, they just have not done that with a player who has had this issue consistently throughout his NFL career. It just, seeing is believing, and I'd love to believe, but I need to see it before I think the Chiefs will make that move.
Earlier today, Tyrann Mathieu was on Cody and Gold. He is going to be in town this week. He is banging the drum for the Chiefs' home opener. Here's what he said. He's not picking against the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Chiefs have been on top for a while, right? And so, you know, it's going to be a lot of people that kind of magnify, right, the bad things that happened to them, and, you know, they try to minimize the great things, right? And so I think the Chiefs are I think they're in a great position because of the people that they have leading the team. And so, you know, obviously Coach Reed and Spags and, you know, Mahomes, right? Like, I think those guys, you know, those guys don't want to lose three games in a row. I can tell you that right now. And so, you know, they're turning over every rock, right? Like, they're going to figure this thing out. And that's one thing I always respected with, you know, my time in Kansas City, right? Because if you can look back, you know, we never really started off that hot, right? Like, we always kind of built ourselves into that as the season went on. So, but yeah, I think the Chiefs are all right, man. Like, I'm not panicking. I know a lot of people. I've been hearing a lot of different things. I thought that was a bad take, you know, by Grunt, right?
Yeah.
You know, because the Chiefs have been physical. They have been a physical team. They have been a great defense, right? Like, they've made those plays in those critical moments. And so, yeah, man, like you know, you just get a bad stretch every now and then, right? But I'd never bet against Patrick or Coach Reed or any of those guys.
I mean, I think Sunday is going to be sort of the proof is in the pudding on whether or not it's just been an up and down stretch for the Chiefs, or is this maybe indicative of something else? I actually finished up the Cowboys documentary yesterday, had a little bit of free time and watched the end of it, and there was something that stood out to me that Michael Irvin said. He said that the road to a championship is never smooth. There's peaks and valleys. Most people can handle the peaks. They can't handle the valleys. I mean, the Chiefs had, I would say, a pretty incredible stretch last year of winning every single close game. It's like you step up to the roulette table and you just keep putting money on red, and it's just red after red after red after red. I mean, you know, eventually it's going to turn black, but you rode this red 9 straight, and look at how much money you've racked up. Like, eventually you lose. So I don't think that the Chiefs losing one game, losing a 1-score game, losing a close game, it is certainly not the end of the world. To me, more so, it's been the how. It's the how they've played and the lack of energy that they've come out with early on in these games. There's no excuse to come out flat in the Super Bowl. It's the biggest game of the season, and the Chiefs look pretty lethargic, I would say, in the first half of it. There's no reason to come out and look how they looked in the first half against the Los Angeles Chargers. You are hoping this game is at home. You're back in a comfortable environment. It's the first game of the season in Arrowhead, and you want to protect home field advantage. You also started off your year 0-1, so I really want to see what energy, I want to see what fight the Chiefs start out with. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be in attendance. We were just talking about that as the person who was banging the drum. I think time heals all when it comes to players. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu never did anything wrong. Sure, maybe he was a little snippy to people on Twitter, but he was really good in the community. He was a very good player in Kansas City, was an all-pro player, helped the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. I think that Tyrann Mathieu is going to be very overwhelmingly received positive on Sunday when he's at Arrowhead, Rob. You agree with that, or you think there could maybe be a little mixed emotions, mixed feelings with kind of how things ended for him in Kansas City?
Absolutely, it'll be 99.9% positive for Tyrann Mathieu. He was the catalyst of culture change, which made the Chiefs defense go from Bob Sutton's doormat to Super Bowl champion good. And I know that he got a little snippy. It may have been Twitter, maybe Instagram. I know he got snippy going out the door. But you'll remember, after his final game in Kansas City, the loss to the Bengals, he gets asked about his future with the Chiefs and what's next. And he was like, I don't want to say weeping, but he was misty talking about his time in Kansas City. I think he loves the community and the community loves him. And if you're out there on Sunday and you're thinking to yourself, well, he was mean to me on social media, you're a dork. I'm sorry. I got nothing else to say to you. He should be overwhelmingly met with positive reviews on Sunday.
I want to read this text, and I just have a question. And this, I understand that maybe this stance just puts me on the opposite of most people, and that's perfectly fine. 913-586-7965. C-Dot, the time when the Chiefs offense was explosive is when Nagy was off the coaching staff and Bieniemy was in charge. We don't have to go back in time. Let's just talk about Sunday's game against the Eagles. Where do you think the explosive plays are coming from? Who do you think they are coming from? Rob, I'll ask you the question first. Text line, I'd like for you to chime in. You guys know my stance. I don't think they have explosive players currently in their offense. Due to injury, due to age, due to those factors, I don't think the Chiefs have a lot of explosiveness in their offense. I think it's going to come a lot to Andy and Pat kind of scheming things up and their ability to run the football and just control the line of scrimmage, control time of possession. If you want to see an explosive version of the Chiefs offense, my question would be is where do you think those explosive plays come from? Because it sounds like to me like the only real chance they have for explosiveness is the one, two, or maybe three times there's a deep down the field pass, and it's usually to a Tyquan Thornton or a Juju Smith-Schuster, one of those kind of guys. Not really an elite playmaker, but a guy who, hey, they schemed him up and Pat missed him just a little bit. I don't know if they have too many guys in their offense coming up on Sunday that can take a 5-yard curl or a 5-yard out and turn that into a 25-yard play down the field. Do you think they have the explosiveness? Because I don't know if it's an offensive coordinator. I don't know if it's a play calling issue. I think right now it's a Jimmy and Joe's issue, not really an X and O's problem.
So me and you just see this differently, and that's fine. We can disagree because I get your point. And I don't know I'm all in on the texter's point about Matt Nagy's the problem, but I just saw Josh Allen last season win the MVP. And Josh Allen was great last season. And I saw Josh Allen on Sunday night against a good Ravens defense play Herculean. Where are his explosive weapons? Where are his Jimmys and Joes that you just go, wow? He's got Keon Coleman, who before the night we thought he has upside, but it's largely untapped. Shakir is a nice player, but no one would confuse him for Randy Moss in his prime. I think Jimmys and Joes are part of
to
it.
To be
but
fair,
I think,
though, Shakir is better than any Chiefs receiver that they currently have right now. I'm not saying he's better than Rashee Rice or Xavier Worthy.
I would think Travis Kelce, but Travis Kelce in here are probably a wash. We got to lean to Shakir. Travis Kelce may be the greatest tight end of all time. Shakir has what? I'll pull up his numbers. Do you have a 1,000-yard season?
I'd rather have Khalil Shakir in 2025 than have Travis Kelce. I'm not talking about in 2018. I'm not talking about in 2021. If you're asking me for the rest of the season, I'd much rather have Khalil Shakir than have Travis Kelce.
Khalil Shakir's best year ever was 800 yards. His best year, he was the same as Travis Kelce, by the way, last year. 76 catches for 821. That sounds a lot like 87 to me, doesn't it? Sounds like the exact same numbers.
I bet he didn't get 116 targets last year to get that. He didn't average 8 yards a catch the way that Travis Kelce did last year.
Let me pull his
either.
Targets. He had 100 targets last year. These numbers sound pretty Travis Kelce-ish, don't they?
Okay.
I mean, I'm not trying to run down Shakir or Travis Kelce. I'm just saying those guys are very similar. They're Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They're just different styles of players. So, okay, let's just say Shakir and Kelce, good players. Outside of that, Josh Allen isn't throwing to Moss in his prime and Chris Carter and all these great players. He's throwing to Josh Palmer, and he won the MVP last year. So I think Jimmy and Joe's plays a factor, but I think you're maybe a little dismissive of something else larger is at play because of Jimmy's and Joe's, because Mahomes won the MVP with an all-world Kelce year and then just guys.
I don't want to paint it like I think that Khalil Shakir, like someone on the text line says, Shakir is not nearly as good as C-Dot thinks. That's crazy. I don't think that Khalil Shakir is some great receiver. I'm saying is a lot of those third receivers that we spent all August saying what their ceiling is, and hey, if this guy hits his ceiling, that's what Khalil Shakir actually is. Like, if you were telling me what's the best version of Hollywood Brown this season, how many yards do you think he has? I'm guessing you think that's what Khalil Shakir was last year, a guy that has somewhere between 750 and 850 yards receiving. That's my only point on Khalil Shakir. They don't have that guy currently on their team. That's not what Juju is in 2025. That's not what Hollywood Brown is in 2025. That's what Khalil is in 2025. So I just think he's a much better receiver than those guys. I think he's, obviously, I'd rather have Rice, I'd rather have Worthy, but for all the other options, if you were telling me, like, to me, this is the kind of player that the Chiefs need to find themselves and develop. Do you know where Khalil Shakir was drafted? He was a 5th-round pick. He was the 148th overall pick. That's what you hope Jalen Royals turns out to be. I know it's early in his career, he's been injured, banged up, but that's what you're hoping. You're hoping that Jalen Royals turns out to be Khalil Shakir, a guy that can have 65, 70 catches, a guy that can have 900 yards receiving and 5 touchdowns. You will live with that on a rookie contract if that's the player that you can develop. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by Kellis Robinette. He covers the Kansas State Wildcats. He has them losing on Friday to the Arizona State Wildcats. We'll find out why. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. We're going to be joined by Kellis Robinette in a bit, but our college football coverage here on 96.5 The Fan is brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light and Tanners are teaming up to make every college game day legendary. Every Saturday, rep your college team, catch every play, and enjoy $15 buckets only at Kansas area Tanners location. Bud Light and Tanners, from the stands to the bar, your game day headquarters. Let's head to the phone lines right now. I'll be joined by Kellis Robinette. He covers the Kansas State Wildcat. Kellis, happy to have you join us today, man. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Absolutely. Let's start with this. What has gone wrong for Kansas State? This is the team that was ranked preseason top 15. We were discussing them as a team that could potentially win the Big 12. I guess that's still on the table, but they are not playing like a team that can win a conference.
No, a lot of things have gone wrong for them this season. Pretty much everything that could go against them has. You look back at their game against Army, they're in a position to win the game, and then they just give up, 3-yard run after 3-yard run, and then Army gets a pretty fortunate bounce on an onside kick, and they get double possessions out of it, and you're in a game where your offense is only on the field for like 5 minutes in the entirety of the second half. Just a weird game that didn't go their way. North Dakota, they couldn't get up the field in that one either. Needed a late drive from Avery Johnson to win. And then in Iowa State, they couldn't make the plays in the fourth quarter either. They lose that one. So really, I mean, they're really close to 0-3. I know you could say, hey, they're close to 3-0. They lost both their games by 3 points. It's still a negative point differential on the season. Their only win is against FCS North Dakota by a field goal. So it just kind of shows you when they've gotten into the second half, they've been in the fourth quarter in every game, and it's hard to win that way.
Sometimes Wildcat fans are a very angry bunch, but I actually was on their side. I'm a little surprised that Chris Klieman didn't read the room a little bit better, and that just was not the time to give those comments about his team.
It was a strange post-game speech he had in the media. I've heard from people who were inside the locker room who said basically he just said the exact same thing to the team too, and even some of those guys thought it was way too positive of a message. I was surprised to hear him say he was dang proud of his team after a 1-2 start, a loss against Army. I mean, I know there were some fluky things in there, and he's trying to come out there and defend his team, but I think Kansas State fans would have liked to have him come out and, you know, not ream his team or anything, but at least to hold them accountable. Show a little bit of tough love in that situation. I will say, though, to Kansas State's credit, we got to talk to some captains on the team, defensive tackle Damian Alalio, starting quarterback Avery Johnson, and they both spoke that way. They said this is unacceptable. We got to figure out a way to, you know, turn the season around like we have in the past. In 2022, they lost an early game to Tulane, and that kind of galvanized their team to go on a winning streak afterwards. So They talked about that. They talked about moving forward. They talked about getting better. It was a little odd that the player messages seemed to be stronger than that from the coach.
Right now, we're talking to Kellis Robinette, who covers the Kansas State Wildcats. Big reason why we wanted you on the show is you are picking against Kansas State on Friday in Arizona. Is that because they're on the road? Is that because of how they're playing? Maybe all of the above? What led you to pick against K-State this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. It's hard to have a lot of conviction on this game just because, like Arizona, you look at them, they're 2-0 with two really impressive victories. They've scored 40 points in both games. They haven't given up a touchdown yet. But the wins have come at home against Hawaii and Weber State. You know, a lot of teams probably would have gone out and beaten those teams handily as well. But I've watched the games. They look athletic. They look like they're an improved team from last season. And, you know, Kansas State hasn't exactly played hard opponents the last 2 weeks either. North Dakota and Army, they play them even, aggregate score. You know, they lose 1-3, they win 1-3. So you look at both sides, one team seems to be improved from last season. They got some swagger. They played 2 games at home. They get to play another one in primetime on Friday night. Kansas State is in a slump. They got to travel on short rest out to Arizona in the heat. A week after playing Army, which is always tiring on teams. And let's not forget, 3 weeks ago they were in Ireland. The beginning of the schedule, nobody did Kansas State any favors scheduling a game in Ireland, a game against Army, and then a road game on short rest against Arizona. I think it's a bad spot for them. I agree with the odds makers who make it basically a coin flip. I could see it going either way, but my gut says Arizona deserves a little bit of an edge here.
So Rob and I were in a Columbia bar at the end of the game. You know, Rob cheers for KU. I cheer for Missouri. I'm kind of indifferent on K-State. I'm not a fan. I don't dislike them. They've never done anything to me. But Rob, as you would imagine, as a KU alum, hates the Wildcats. Rob is in the bar yelling how bad K-State is and that they're not going to make a bowl game. Do you feel like if K-State loses this game and they fall to 1-3, are we talking about this season really going off the rails?
I mean, yeah, if their goal is to reach the postseason, they need to win this game. Technically speaking, all of their long-term goals would still be in front of them with a loss, because if you win the Big 12, you can reach the college football playoff with an automatic berth. But yeah, to start 1-3, that's not something anybody envisioned. I looked at FanDuel today, and they had Kansas State's over-under win total for the whole season right now at 5.5, and you could get the over 5.5 at plus money. That just goes to show you what I guess the real experts think about where they are right now. So it might be hard for them to get to a bowl game regardless of what happens here this week. But, yeah, they need some wins. Their Big 12 schedule isn't the easiest. And to fall to 1-3, I mean, they do have a bye week coming up. They could get healthy. They could get things turned around after that. But you would much rather be 500 going into that proposition than 1-3, and that makes this a big game.
What happens if K-State loses to Kansas this year?
Well, you could probably take whatever dissatisfaction you've noticed from the Kansas State fan base already and multiply it by, you know, 10 or 15. People aren't going to be happy. That's certainly one thing that fans of Manhattan have hung their hat on all these years. They've won every single time over Kansas going back to the first year Bill Snyder came out of retirement. I mean, the streak's not going to last forever. It has to end at some point, but Kansas State fans want it to go on as long as possible. So to have a down season, the possibility of losing that game would make it even worse.
I mean, you said 10 or 15, Kellis. That might be the most generous thing you've ever said. I mean, right? I don't want to be in your mentions if they lose to KU this year, because you know KU is running on the field. They're tearing down the goalpost. They're dropping that thing in the lake. Oh, a time will be had in their new stadium. I don't want that for you, Kellis. I really don't want that for you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I hear you. Maybe you need to multiply it by 100. But I will say if Kansas State gets things turned around here and they can keep the streak going against Kansas, you do have to kind of wonder when's the year it ends.
That's a great point. That is Kellis Robinette joining us on the show today. He covers the Kansas State Wildcats. The over-under right now for K-State wins is at 5.5. Kellis, great stuff. We look forward to catching up with you on just a more positive note when it comes to the Wildcats.
All right, I'll be here.
Absolutely. That is Kellis Robinette joining us on the show today. Always happy to talk a little Kansas State football. I wish you guys could have seen Rob. I'm serious. I wish you could have seen Rob. For those of you that have been to Columbia, we're sitting there, we're at Shot Bar. Rob had never been. I'm like, hey, Rob, hey, let's just go. Why don't we just have a drink? My team won, your team lost. Let's celebrate college football. We're out. He's like, oh, okay. So we go out there. They got a big projector. They got the K-State game on. Rob is just sitting there. Rob's kind of mad that KU lost. Other KU fans are coming up to him and dapping him like, oh, next year. You know, they're kind of bonding over it. Rob is yelling at the screen, K-State stinks. They're not going to a bowl. They stink. He's doing this the entire fourth quarter. Now everybody's like looking at the screen trying to see the game or not. He's like, Kansas is beating them this year. You know, you start talking to yourself when your team lost. Now you got to try to pump yourself back up because they already lost one rivalry game. They can't lose the other rivalry game. You guys always think I'm the negative one. I dance on the graves. Rob has been secretly dancing on this K-State grave for the last 2 weeks. He thinks you're done. He thinks you're cooked. Rob, you betting KU to beat K-State?
Yep. By the way, I looked at ESPN Bet earlier today. I was talking to Speck.
You want to look ahead? I'm guessing KU is a 3-point favorite?
K-State's a 4-point favorite right now. If I get KU plus 4, I mean, money alert.
Why not just do it right now? Why don't you just lock it in right now before something changes? Lock it in right now at plus 4. You're not confident? When's that game? It's like mid-October?
October 25th.
Oh, it's going to be cold. I was going to say, I'll go to that, but if it's cold, I ain't going to. Come on now. I'm not, if it's cold, if I can see my breath, I ain't going out there. I ain't watching no KU football if it's cold outside. Coming up at the top of the hour, I have a would-you-rather question. Tomorrow, the Chiefs could either add Saquon Barkley or Jalen Carter. Which one of those players would you add to the Chiefs? I'll give you my answer. Keep it right here. It's the drive.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.